Breaking news via remote. I'm Tommy. America's longest war is now officially over. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani with details.
After 20 years,
every single U.S. service member is now out of Afghanistan.
General Frank McKenzie, who heads U.S. Central Command, says the withdrawal has ended, and with it, the military mission that began shortly after 9/11. Air Force transport planes ferried the final troops out of Kabul after a chaotic two-week evacuation of civilians. McKenzie says some 6,000 American citizens were pulled out, but some were left behind.
We did not get everybody out that we wanted to get out.
A final chapter to a war likely to be remembered for colossal failures and the deaths of more than 2,000 Americans. The Taliban celebrated the departure with gunfire after driving the world's most powerful military out of their homeland. Sagar Magani, Washington.
An AP correspondent, Aya Batraoui, reports the tiny nation of Qatar is now well-positioned to liaise between the Taliban and the United States.
It is also a place that has hosted the Taliban's political leadership in exile for years, and so it maintains ties with both Washington and the Taliban, who are now in control in Kabul and throughout Afghanistan, not only in U.S.-led evacuations, but also in what comes next for Afghanistan.
Analysts suggest that Qatar has played an outsized role in U.S. efforts to evacuate the tens of thousands of people from Afghanistan. And there was more celebratory shots that rang out in Kabul on Monday as the United States completed the withdrawal of its forces from Afghanistan, ending 20 years of war that culminated in the militant Taliban's return to power. A Taliban spokesman said the last U.S. soldier has left Kabul airport and our country gained complete independence. This is VOA News. AP correspondent Charles de la Desma reports the EU is reviewing the travel advice for Americans because of a rise in COVID cases.
The threshold for being on the EU list is having not more than 75 new COVID-19 cases per 100,000 inhabitants over the previous 14 days. Coronavirus cases have surged in the US in recent weeks, running at more than 1,100 a day, the highest level since mid-March.
That's AP correspondent Charles de la Desma reporting. New Zealand's Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern put the country's largest city, Auckland, in lockdown for another 2 weeks on Monday, saying the job of eliminating the Delta variant of COVID-19 was not done yet, as the country recorded its first death linked to U.S. drug maker Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine. The information about the death was released by the health ministry following review by an independent panel monitoring the safety of the vaccines. The ministry's statement did not give the woman's age. The board considered the woman's death was due to myocarditis, which is known to be a rare side effect of the Pfizer COVID-19 vaccine. Myocarditis is an inflammation of the heart muscle that can limit the organ's ability to pump blood and can cause changes in heartbeat rhythms. Rescuers in boats, helicopters, and high water trucks have brought hundreds of people trapped by Hurricane Ida's floodwaters to safety. Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards said Monday that crews would keep up the rescue effort and eventually go door to door in hard-hit areas to make sure everyone is okay. Ida left scores of coastal Louisiana residents trapped by floodwaters while wrecking the electrical grid across a wide swath of the state in the sweltering heat. One of the most powerful hurricanes ever to hit the U.S. mainland has claimed two lives. No major flooding was reported inside the flood control system that protects New Orleans, but other areas were inundated. Leaded gasoline has finally reached the end of the road. The UN Environment Office said Monday after the last country in the world halted the sale of the highly toxic fuel. Algeria stopped providing leaded gas last month, prompting the UN Environment Agency to declare the official end of its use in cars, which has been blamed for a wide range of human health problems. Petroleum containing a form of lead was first sold almost 100 years ago to increase engine performance. It was widely used for decades until researchers discovered that it could cause heart disease, strokes, and brain damage. UNEP has said that studies showed leaded gas caused measurable intellectual impairment in children and millions of premature deaths. Via remote, I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 31st. And here are some of the stories we are covering. Kenya's health ministry warns against unapproved COVID vaccination centers.
There are no vaccinations that should take place outside the Ministry of Health designated vaccination approved sites and by persons approved by the Ministry of Health.
In Zambia, a right group is urging anti-immunity for former President Edgar Lungu. A judge in Liberia orders the arrest of the management of Frontpage Africa newspaper. And South Sudan says it did not shut down the country's internet system on Monday.
What happened is that, you know, our internet capacity is very weak. We have only 3G internet. Ali Borbori was the exciting internet. He wanted to see the links of the planned peaceful demonstrations. And as a result, the networks were overwhelmed.
A Sierra Leone community takes on a mining giant, and Zimbabwe's vegan women rangers come to the rescue of park animals. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Kenya's health ministry is calling out health institutions and workers who allegedly are stealing and diverting COVID-19 vaccines from government-designated inoculation centers to private, unapproved centers while charging Kenyans for the same service that is supposed to be free. As Atieno Odhiambo reports from Nairobi, the health ministry has also warned politicians to stop political campaigning at COVID vaccination centers.
Speaking in Nairobi on Monday while issuing a status report on the state of COVID-19 vaccination in the country, Health Cabinet Secretary Mutahi Kagwe warned Kenyans against getting vaccines from unapproved centers.
There are no vaccinations that should take place outside the Ministry of Health designated vaccination approved sites and by persons approved by the Ministry of Health. There is no way an individual around the country of whatever station will have vaccines of their own unless they are stolen vaccines.
Kagwe also urged Kenyans to whistleblow on health workers and health institutions that are demanding payment for COVID-19 vaccination.
We want to make it very clear, vaccines are not for sale in Kenya. And as a citizen, if anybody proposes that you should pay for being vaccinated, you should report so that we can deregister that institution and deregister the person who is charging you.
Also speaking from the same podium, Director General of Health, Dr. Patrick Amoth, reiterated why it is important for Kenyans to get the vaccine from authorized centers only.
Only go to a Ministry of Health designated vaccination point where we know and we can be able to vouch for the safety and the storage conditions of the vaccines. You should not get vaccination from any other point.
Kagwe's warning extended politicians who he said were using the vaccination drive to push their political agenda. He gave a stern warning to politicians who he said are holding political rallies against Ministry of Health guidelines.
It has come to our notice that some politicians have begun to politicize the vaccination process for their own political gains. I also want to urge the political class of whatever level that it is getting to a point where you are frustrating us as the Ministry of Health. We cannot have this nonsense of three steps forward and then we come back all the way to where we were before.
The chair of the COVID-19 Vaccination Task Force, Dr. Willis Akwale, revealed that about 100,000 people were considered vaccine defaulters, those who had only received one dose of the vaccine and failed to get the second dose within the recommended period.
We have been looking through our Chanjo system. About 100,000 people, by the time we began the second dose, have not received their second dose. And a bit of it is because of what we've said. Some are saying, I'm waiting for Johnson & Johnson. I want to get Moderna or I want to get Pfizer. We are really telling them AstraZeneca is also there insufficient. You need to get that second dose because we've not adopted the policy of mix and match yet.
According to the health ministry, a total of 2,752,266 vaccines have been administered across the country as of August 29, out of which 1,949,340 are first doses, while 802,926 are second doses. Health workers are the most fully vaccinated group, followed by those above 58 years old. Atieno Odhiambo, VOA Daybreak Africa, in Nairobi, Kenya.
A spokesperson says South Sudan President Salva Kiir has told the country's new parliament to adhere to the implementation of the revitalized peace agreement and to legislate on matters concerning peace while scrutinizing development projects in the country. President Kiir on Monday opened the country's long-delayed parliament amid tight security as a coalition of COVID society groups calling themselves the People's Coalition for Civil Action had called for a mass protest to demand the resignation of President Kiir and his first deputy Riek Machar. There were also reports that the government had disrupted the internet service. Presidential spokesperson Atain Wek Atain says the government did not shut down the internet. Instead, he says South Sudan's weak internet service was simply overwhelmed as people were trying to get news about the purported. Presidential spokesperson Atain Wek Atain says the government did not shut down the internet. Instead, he says South Sudan's weak internet service was simply overwhelmed as people were trying to get news on social media platforms about the purported protest.
The president delivered the address to the nation, the policy address. He told the parliamentarian to strictly adhere to the implementation of revitalized peace agreement or resolution of conflict in the country, and also ask them to legislate on the matters concerning peace and to also work very hard to scrutinize and check and balance the developmental projects that are ongoing. Also, the president touched on health and education and urged the parliamentarian to be able to authorize, you know, monies for education and the health sector in the country. The president talked about the issue of how the revitalized peace agreement is undergoing implementation and lamented the fact that there are still some disagreement on the issue of dividing the command between the government and the opposition forces, of which, according to the agreement, it should have been 60-40, 40 for the opposition, in which the SAWA would be going away with 10%, and 30% will go to the SPLA, SPLMIO, and the government would be going with 60%, but the SPLMIO is still disagreeing on the command structure.
We talked yesterday about the protest. Did it take place?
No, I was telling you the truth, James Barton. I told you the protest was online. This is online protest. We have never seen that kind of protest before. It never happened anywhere. All the protesters, including the in established democracy, a certain group of people may come out and put the application to the police to approve the peaceful demonstration. And the leadership of such group would be also on the field to oversee the peaceful protest. Now, what is saying in our situation is the fact that all the leaders of would-be demonstrators are all online. They are not in the ground.
Is it true that your government deployed heavy security and that you cut internet services?
No. First of all, in any country, when there are demonstration plans, police has to be on the street to ensure no anyone who is not authorized or no one that can harm the demonstrators. You know, South Sudan is a very fragile when it comes to, you know, rendering security service to the people, simply because there are many groups. There are arms. Some of them are not accounted for. So South Sudan only made precautions to ensure no life is actually claimed anywhere. So it was just a normal process.
So you are saying that the government did not shut down social media in South Sudan ahead of the parliament opening?
What happened is that, you know, our internet capacity is very weak. We have only 3G internet. And everybody was accessing internet. They wanted to see the nature of the planned peaceful demonstrations. Who are these people planning them? Because they are not known. Nobody knows the nature of what would have been the peaceful demonstration. So everybody was looking for news. And as a result, the network, which are actually operating in a very poor capacity, were overwhelmed and could not satisfy anybody who is actually trying to access news on social media. But it wasn't cut totally.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, James Barton.
Atain Wek Atain is spokesperson for South Sudan President Salva Kiir. He was speaking with us from the capital, Juba. In Zambia, Community Action Against Corruption, a political pressure group, is calling on the new parliament to remove the immunity of former President Edgar Lungu to allow for an independent forensic corruption audit of the previous administration. The call comes as President Hakainde Hichilema announced new leaders at the top of the country's security institutions. Brighton Temple is the chief executive officer of the Community Action Against Corruption. He tells viewers Peter Clotte that the work of the government's anti-corruption agencies to investigate allegations of graft in the previous administration will be severely hampered if the immunity of the former president is not lifted.
Our call pertains to the fact that there was too much corruption allegations in the immediate past regime, at which quite a good number of senior government officials seemingly were being shielded by government itself from facing prosecution against corruption. So we believe one of the mandates why Zambians voted for the new government, that is the government of President Hakainde Hichilema, is because one of the topmost facts which Zambians wanted was to clean up corruption. So this government cannot move on without attending to the corruption which took place in the previous regime. We don't want to set a precedent where we say people can misbehave, people can mishandle state resources and get scot-free after change of government. This is more the reason why we are calling for the removal of the immunity of the immediate party president, so that when the parliament or national assembly convene, let them initiate the process of removal of that immunity.
But Brighton, evidence is the name of the game. You have to investigate to have the evidence before you can move forward with what you are suggesting. Why wouldn't you allow the authorities, including the anti-graft agency, to investigate thoroughly, put up the evidence, and then, you know, make the case to the population that indeed there was corruption? Because at this moment, they are just mere allegations.
Peter, you can say they are mere allegations. Whatever transpired in the previous regime, they are already in public domain. For example, if you come here in Zambia, we have the issue of 48 houses. Do we need to carry out investigation of 48 houses? Everything is already in public domain. There is nothing to start investigating. The issue of exorbitant purchase of prior tenders, the issue of disappearing of COVID-19 funds, all these corruption cases, all these are in public domain. So there is no need of wasting time to start investigating. All what is there is for one of the members of parliament to move a motion.
This has happened before during former President Chiluba's time. You risk having what you call political persecution if you go that route, calling on parliament to immediately remove the immunity of the former president. The president currently, Hakainde Hichilema, said the institutions will do its work professionally. Why don't you allow this to be done?
In the past, we can say if those two corruption allegations collapsed against the former president, that should not give us the mandate to say we have to delay and we have to wait. What happened for President Chiluba? We delayed prosecuting him. The case delayed for 8 years. Witnesses obviously were tempered with, evidence tempered with. What happened at the end of the day? We lost the case as Zambians, and the corrupt people became the victors.
Brighton Temple is the chief executive officer of the Community Action Against Corruption of Zambia. He was speaking with VOA's Peter Clotty. You are listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 31st. In Liberia, the management of Front Page Africa newspaper says it has appealed to the country's chief justice to ensure that the judicial branch uses its powers for those who need it the most, and not to muzzle, intimidate, or instill fear in journalists. This comes after Circuit Court Judge Usman Feka ordered the arrest of the management of Front Page Africa for what the judge called their failure to sign for and receive a writ of summons. The Committee to Protect Journalists says it was also dismayed by the judge's order to arrest Front Page Africa's management. It called on the judge to arrest the real criminals and not journalists who are exposing corruption. Rodney Sear is the editor-in-chief and publisher of Front Page Africa. He says the paper did not refuse to receive the writ of summons.
This morning, around 11:51, almost 12 o'clock, a sheriff's deputy went to our offices to serve a writ of arrest. I haven't read the writ up to now, but apparently the judge, something to do with a story we ran last week about the former defense minister's trial, Mr. Bernie Samukai. The judge claimed that although he came down with a ruling in the case, he was not the original judge. And the story attributed the initial ruling to him. For that reason, he wanted us to go and explain his story. So we were in an office because of COVID-19. We didn't go to the office. We work from home. Our reporters submit the stories through our WhatsApp chat group and the emails. So we had no idea this was being served until we received the order that we'll be arrested.
So you did not refuse to sign for the writ of summons?
No, the only person at the office was the security. And because of the time factor that was served at almost 12 o'clock midday and asking to appear at 12:30, that makes it almost nearly impossible for anyone from our office to appear at the court. So I think the judge was very excessive in his decision to have us arrested.
The court said that you wrongfully reported the story in question.
Well, I'm not sure what he means by that. The case against the former defense minister came down last week. It was his decision. I mean, he ruled on the case, the final ruling. I think his issue was the initial case was submitted by his predecessor. That was the only discrepancy, but we did not print any false article against the judge.
Rodney, for the purpose of our listeners, what exactly is the case involving the former defense minister, Bernie Samukai?
Well, Bernie Samukai was a minister of defense under the former President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf. He was accused of mismanaging money intended for the retired armed forces of Liberia, widows and soldiers, missing during his tenure, nearly $250,000. But last week, the Supreme Court came down with a ruling against Bernie Samukai. That ruling pretty much said that the defense minister would not be able to take his seat. He was elected as senator for Lofa County. The minister was able to pay some of the money that he's alleged to have misused or mismanaged, but the court insisting that he should not be allowed to take his seat in the Senate. And the report the judge is referring to, based on some irregularities in the court, he claims was submitted by his predecessor in the case and not him. And that's the issue that I think we were served.
So has your paper made any legal representation to the court pertaining to the writ of summons?
Not yet. We haven't seen it. We haven't received it. So if you go to our office anytime, James, there's in the daytime, especially the time they serve that writ, there's nobody there, only the security. And the time they serve it, there was no way anyone from the office would have been able to go to the court in 1 hour. That's just not enough. I think when you serve someone the writ, give them at least a couple of days, or at least a week minimum for them to appear. But the 1 hour notice is just too excessive.
Rodney, thank you so much. Always nice to talk with you.
Thank you, James.
That was Rodney Sear, editor-in-chief and publisher of Liberia's Front Page Africa newspaper. He was speaking with us from Monrovia. Communities in Sierra Leone are nearing their time in court against mining giants Okti and Kwedu Limited for what they say are environmental and land rights infringements by the diamond mine in their area. The case could go to the Makini High Court by the end of the year. Jonathan Kaufman at Advocates for Community Alternatives says their clients, the residents of the nearby villages, are ready with testimonies, evidence, and an upcoming scientific study that aims to show how the mining explosions are impeding their way of life.
This kind of a trial in the U.S. could take weeks or months. I think in Sierra Leone, it's more likely to be something like 1 or 2 weeks. In terms of outcomes, the plaintiffs are asking for compensation because they've lost their homes, they've lost their fields, they've lost their livelihoods. They're asking for injunctions. So basically, they're asking for the court to force the company to stop blasting in a way that shakes their homes and destroys their peace of mind, and to stop polluting the waterways. And they've also asked for an investigation of the way that the company is supposed to be paying paying money to the community according to law, which says that a certain percentage is supposed to go back to the community. But as far as the community knows, they've never received any of it.
And what kind of power does the Makini High Court have on a national perspective?
This is the trial court. So there's two levels of appeal. There's a court of appeals and there's a Supreme Court. If we win, it probably won't be the end. But you also never know how things can go. I also think that Aktea and Koidu Limited, they're very reluctant to be put on trial. They don't want to have to give testimony in court because what they have done is so obvious. It is obvious to a casual visitor who walks into these communities how badly people are affected and how it's so obvious that a long time ago the inhabitants should have been relocated and relocated properly. I don't know whether Aktea and Koidu Limited and the other companies would prolong the process if things started turning against them.
There was also an action or legal complaint in the New York federal courts that has to do with this case. Can you tell me more about that one?
One really important part of any of these lawsuits is getting access to internal documents and information. And in this case, internal secret information to Aktea is super important because this is a company that spread across 5, 6, 7 different countries at different corporate levels, each of which is infamous for their secrecy and keeping business confidentiality. They may have their assets squirreled away in one jurisdiction. They may have their contracts held in another jurisdiction. And a Sierra Leone court is going to get all caught up in that. And even if we were to win the case, we might be left with a situation where the Sierra Leone court couldn't force the company to pay money because maybe all their money is held elsewhere. We have gone to the courts of New York because Aktea's parent company, BSG Resources, filed for bankruptcy. And it's a completely abusive process. They filed for bankruptcy because they want to escape being held responsible for a $2 billion arbitral award against another that was awarded in favor of another mining company that used to be their business partner that they betrayed. So they declared bankruptcy so they could avoid having to pay. That means that now that their opponent, Vale, this other mining company, has taken them to court and forced them to turn over all kinds of information about where their money has gone. And all of that information would be super important and useful for our plaintiffs, the villagers in Sierra Leone, where you have these giant corporate mining titans that are fighting over hundreds of millions and billions of dollars. But the people who really suffered are the villagers in places like Sierra Leone. So we are now trying to use a court process in New York that would turn that on its head a little bit and take advantage of the fact that these giants have been fighting with each other and turn it to the advantage of the communities instead by forcing those two opponents in New York to turn over the documents that they've exchanged confidentially with each other to our clients.
That was Jonathan Kaufman, Executive Director for Advocates for Community Alternatives. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Accra, Ghana. The impact of the COVID-19 pandemic has increased wildlife poaching around Zimbabwe's national parks as people who lost their jobs hunt the animals for food. To help protect the animals, anti-poaching organizations have been formed, including a squad of vegan women rangers. Columbus Mavunga reports.
Those are recruits of the International Anti-Poaching Foundation on a drill near Manapu's National Park, about 300 kilometers north of Harare. Nyaradzo Auxilia Woto has been part of this group known as Akashinga, the Brave Ones, since it started in 2017 to fight poaching here. The 29-year-old Woto says she does not fear poachers or wildlife.
I'm not even afraid. At first, I was a bit afraid. But now, because we have been taught on animal behavior and everything, and also because of the time that I've spent in the bush, now I've got experience. So whenever I encounter even a lion, I won't be scared.
The women are well armed, and if they encounter poachers, they detain them and turn them over to police for prosecution. Damien Menda, an Australian national and an Iraq war veteran, formed the Akashinga Project. He says anti-poaching patrols will help preserve Africa's wildlife, which has been under steady assault from poachers for decades.
It was a trial in the beginning, a small trial on one reserve in northern Zimbabwe. We started with 16 women protecting 90,000 acres. We've now got 240 staff as part of this program. We've got 8 reserves that we patrol. We're on target to have 1,000 staff by 2026.
Tinashe Farao, spokesman of the Zimbabwe Parks and Wildlife Management Authority, says the efforts of such conservation groups are helping to fight poaching in this wildlife. With more rangers coming on board, Zimbabwe hopes to eliminate poaching in its entirety and ensure the safety of wildlife roaming the national parks. Columbus Mavungam for VOA News, Urungwe, Zimbabwe.
And that's it for this Tuesday, August 31st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with all our engineers, I'm James Barty in Washington saying, have a wonderful day.